Love Tolstoy's three questions, Kathy's story for all ages, and my failed attempt to turn the pages in order. For me, I think it's really just a single question that matters. What should I do now? What should I do now? Not necessarily an easy question to answer, at least not always, but certainly easy to remember. The past is behind us, or so it seems. The future exists only in our imaginations, or so it seems. The present moment, the here and now, is all there really is, or so it seems. How am I going to live it? How am I going to live it right now? I had always thought I was pretty good at living in the present, or at least striving to. Appreciate and learn from the past, let go of your mistakes and regrets, ponder and plan for the future a bit, but not too much. Understand the long-term implications of your actions and your words. Try your best not to worry. It doesn't help. And cherish the day, the present, the moment, wherever you are, whatever you are doing, whomever you are with. And if there are important things you and if there are important things you want or need to do or say, err toward doing them sooner, not later. Err toward now. Live your values, your priorities, with the greater good always in mind. This is just the way I am. Sorry. But I do think I've gotten a little better at this in the past year. I don't know why, but perhaps for two reasons. Number one, as I slid into my 50s, slid, that doesn't seem the right way to describe that. As I slid into my 50s, I began for the first time to appreciate the finiteness of my time in this world. A close friend from college my age recently died of a stroke in Mexico. One of my best friends from high school my age died suddenly on a business trip to New York City last year. Both of my parents got sick in their 60s, and both barely made it to 70. Up into and through my 40s, I had always felt I had all the time in the world, still in front of me. Now a little older and a little wiser, I realize I don't. Nor did I when I was younger. Life is pretty short, and also plenty long enough, too. Whether you live to be 50, or 100, or 15. Number two, sorry, this is going to be hard to say, but everything's okay. Probably last August, probably about a year ago today-ish, I sat with a doctor at the Leahy Clinic, who after a couple weeks of various scans and tests and things told me I had cancer. That certainly got my attention. Then for another couple of weeks, until my first surgery, I was left pondering the uncertainty of just how bad or not bad it might be. That really got my attention. It turns out I was pretty fortunate, and it looks like we caught it all in time. As I'm sure many of you know from your own experience and that of your loved one, it's a process, always a process, rarely an over and done sort of thing. But I've conveniently decided I'm going to be fine. My doctor feels the same way. I like that. 88 years on this planet, I think, might be nice. Or more, but I don't want to be too greedy. Time. The past, the present, the future, earlier, now, later. Time, time, time. If you believe these ideas are pretty straightforward, I'm going to guess, perhaps incorrectly, that you haven't devoted that much time to studying or thinking about them. If you already believe these ideas are messy, complicated, and unclear, I'm afraid, as I said earlier, I'm not going to be the least bit helpful. I'm here to muddy things up for those of you with clarity, not to provide clarity for those of you already in the mud. First of all, let's be clear what we are talking about. There are two basic definitions, frameworks, working understandings of time. An interesting one and an uninteresting one. The uninteresting one is basically about the human constructs which revolve around clocks and calendars. Our scorekeeping system, our measurement system. When is next week's service? On Sunday, August 18th, 2019, 10 o'clock a.m., Eastern Standard Time. Easy enough. A.M. is Latin for ante-meridiem, before midday, before noon. 2019 could be further identified as A.D. or C.E. A.D., Latin for Anno Domini, in the year of our Lord, after the birth of Christ. Though the historians generally believe the Romans screwed this one up and are off by about 5 years, which means this is probably about the 2024th year of our Lord. C.E. is the sometimes used, slightly less Christian-centric notation of common era. Before we move to the more interesting stuff, a few reminders I think are in order about our current timekeeping systems, our clocks, our calendars. There are precisely two natural phenomena that are central to both, the day and the year. Pretty much everything else we made up. The day, or more precisely the solar day, is a full rotation of our planet back to the same reference point relative to the sun. A stellar day is one full rotation, but because we're also orbiting the sun, I realized if I started to need a whiteboard, I'd probably gone too far. Not a stellar day, but a solar day. A solar day is made up of exactly 24 hours, precisely defined as 86,400 seconds, because we, as humans, have defined it that way. No other reason. Given, however, that the Earth does not orbit the sun in a perfect circle, but elliptically, an oval, 24 hours is the average, and the day actually fluctuates a few seconds in either direction. Not many people pay attention, but there are leap seconds every once in a while added to the atomic standard clock, as well as leap years. Why 24 hours? Why 60 minutes per hour? Why 60 seconds each? This is not a natural phenomenon at all. This goes back to early civilization. The Egyptians, the Sumerians, the Babylonians, Mesopotamia, basically the cradle of civilization several thousand years ago, where the Tigris and the Euphrates born our first agricultural civilizations, what is mostly now current-day Iraq. The Egyptians devised a sundial that broke the day into 10 parts. Part of the day before the sun was high enough to reach the dial was an 11th part, and the part of the day that was late enough in the day that they lost track of the dial was the 12th part. And those 12 parts eventually got cast into what the night sky looked over 12 as well, and hence the origins, or speculation of the origins of 24. The Sumerians used a base 60 system rather than our base 10, base 100, and hence 60 seconds, 60 minutes. It's also speculated that the 360-degree circle back when the sun used to revolve around the Earth, remember, that tracked the roughly 360 days in the year, hence the origins of much of what we have. The other natural phenomenon, again, the day being the first, is the year, the astronomical year, without getting too complicated, is the time it takes the Earth to make one complete orbit around the sun, which is a little bit more than 365 and one quarter days. The lunar month is another natural phenomenon. The time it takes the moon to orbit the Earth, there's about seven different ways to define it, 27, 28 days typically, is also a natural phenomenon. And the rough basis historically for our calendar months, but it does not fit any natural or rational way with the year. It is really no longer part of our calendar or timekeeping system, other than those of us who are fascinated by tides and the moon. And we're still left with the historical remnants, the idea of months, although not the astrological concept. The week, the seven-day week, the beginning of the year, no natural phenomena at all. Biblical, historical origins all. Centuries, millennia mean nothing. It's all because we're base 10. If we were Sumerians, we wouldn't be so consumed with centuries and millennium. And lastly, the calendar system we use is the Gregorian calendar. Pope Gregory, 16th century, needed to fix the Julian calendar, which Julius Caesar, at the time of Christ, instituted. The key thing he needed to fix was the leap year concept because of the 365 and a quarter days. You know, leap years fall in the same years as presidential elections, makes it pretty easy to remember. 2020 will be a leap year, 2024 will be a leap year. And most of you should cover your ears at this point because it's way more than anybody wants to know. But if the leap year is divisible by 100, it's not a leap year. But if it's divisible by 400, it is. 2000 was a leap year. 2100 will not be a leap year, even though hopefully we will have an election. Don't consider that assumed. So why is Pope Gregory, the Pope of the Catholic Church, consumed with the calendar in the 16th century? Well, the seasons were getting out of whack because the Julian calendar was messed up, and it was creeping a quarter day forward, and the spring equinox was drifting forward in the calendar, which messes up Easter, which falls on the first Sunday after the first full moon after the spring equinox. So Pope Gregory had to fix this. The really entertaining part is it required not only adding the leap year concept, but to make up for 16 centuries of a calendar that was flawed, Thursday, October 4th, 1582, was followed by Friday, October 15th, 1582. The populace was ticked off because they thought this was a scam to cheat them out of their October rent. And they were going to pay a month and only get 19 or 20 days. The months were left off. Of course, August is named for Augustus, Emperor of Rome. July is Julius Caesar. I think January through June are all Roman gods, March, Mars, war. And then entertainingly, September, October, November, December, right? Latin. Those are the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th months of the year, or at least they were when we had a 10-month calendar. Now we have a 12-month calendar, but they are still named as the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th months. Is that enough of all that? Sorry. The more interesting aspects of the definition of time, clocks and calendars and keeping track of time assigned are about the very nature of time, the concept. And they generally go something like this. Time is the indefinite continued progress of existence and events in the past, present, and future regarded as a whole. Or, time is the non-spatial continuum, although Einstein would rewrite this, time is the non-spatial continuum that is measured in terms of events which succeed one another from past through to the present and into the future. Or from the philosophical perspective about time called presentism, we have the view that only the present is real, only the present exists. The philosophical perspective of eternalism offers the view that all points in time are equally real. Past events do exist. Future events that we have not yet experienced also exist. The flow of time we experience is an illusion of consciousness, because in reality, time is always and time is everywhere. There is also an argument that only the past and the future exist. This one rattles me quite a bit. And that the false notion of the present moment is the thing that actually does not exist. It's like the horizon, looking out over the ocean where the water meets the sky. You can see the horizon, but it's not there. You look at ocean, 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 sky. The horizon does not exist. It is argued the present moment may be the same way, because defined tightly enough, it is simply where the past rolls into the future. Defined yet another way, time is simply what prevents everything from happening all at once. Although it has also been postulated that everything that has ever been and ever will be is happening right now. And I have no idea what that means. When I am confused, and I want to be clear, I am not a hard science guy. I'm not even a soft science guy. I'm a historian, economics, politics, humanities guy. So don't freak out when I mention Albert Einstein. I regularly turn to Albert Einstein. It generally doesn't clear anything up, but it raises the level of confusion to a higher plane. And it's a good way to make sure I am confused about the most interesting things. A little more than a century ago, the German-born physicist gave us the theory of special relativity in 1905 and the theory of general relativity in the 10 years or so that followed. Some of the most counterintuitive craziness any of us will ever encounter. all which has consistently and remarkably been found to be accurate over the last century plus. If you have not spent any time as a layperson to the sciences with Einstein's special theory of relativity and general theory of relativity, you should. I know some of you think that's just a really laughable idea. E equals mc squared, energy, mass, and the speed of light. That's part of this. That's part of Einstein's findings. It's also what led, unfortunately, to the atomic bomb, the power and significance of his discoveries. That's the speed of light is a constant, always. Are there any physicists here? Okay, good. Oh, dang. Refrain from comment till after the sermon. Possibly the only constant as I understand it, and therefore almost everything else is variable and flexible, time included. A complete reworking of our understanding of the nature of gravity and introduced us basically to the concept of four dimensions of space-time, which I'll offer a tiny bit more about. I've been trying to get a handle on this for years, and the last month was a good excuse to try to push a little harder. Gravity is actually the distortion of space and time, according to Einstein. His theories are holding up. Time becomes relative, time becomes flexible, and our experience of it as we know it is fundamentally illusion, an illusion of consciousness. Prior to this time, time was believed to be an absolute and a constant. Whatever your unit of measure, Galileo, Newton, everyone, probably most of us today, whether you're standing here at this pulpit, sitting in one of these pews, traveling in an airplane on a different planet, anywhere on this planet, that you would experience time, your watch, your clock would read similarly to that of anyone anywhere else. This is not true. And it has been demonstrated is not true. In three dimensions of space, right? That's easy enough. With three dimensions, an X and a Y and a Z axis, we can pinpoint anything anywhere in the universe. And time is separate. I am where I am right now, and I happen to be here at this moment. The space is a discrete function of identifying where I am, or where any of us are right now. Time is a separate discrete function of I was there at this place at this time. And our experience of time is fundamentally the same, regardless of our viewpoint and where we are. All of this is wrong and has been proven wrong. Time goes slower and is experienced more slowly the closer to the center of the Earth that you are, or any significant mass. The top of a mountain versus the bottom of the sea. Time goes slow. Did I get that reversed? Thank you. Sorry. The important thing is they're moving at different paces. Time goes more slowly the further you are and the quicker the closer you are. The faster you go, the slower time goes as well. This has been demonstrated. And it's only minimal bits of seconds on our scale on this planet. But we forget how limited our scope is. We're tiny people on a tiny planet, and we think this is everything, but we're experiencing just the edges of this notion. So if you're traveling 500 miles an hour on an airplane 30,000 feet up, time is, in fact, progressing more slowly. You are aging more slowly than someone sitting on a sofa in a submarine, for example. It's not science fiction. Although the differences are tiny on our scale, there's significance across all of space and time. Einstein postulated that space and time are actually intertwined in a four-dimensional thing called space-time. Three dimensions of space, as I described a second ago, and that we are here now are all one thing. When we leave this church, the church will still be here. And if you're having lunch in Portland tomorrow, the cafe is there now, even though you're not there yet. Things are where they are in space, regardless of where we are. We're all very comfortable with that. But we are also wrongly comfortable with the idea that that time is different. The reality is that, according to Einstein, and my physicist can chat with us after, that as when we leave this space together at 11 o'clock today, and a space-time continuum with four dimensions, what just happened here is still here. The closest I've come to being able to make sense of the words around this is the tree falling in the forest idea. Because, you know, does a tree falling in the forest make any sound? Well, it depends on how you define sound. If a tree falls in the forest, it stirs up airwaves that will travel some distance based on the impact and based on how it snapped. But that sound, that snapping sound, it's almost like a shotgun going off if it's a large tree and a branch breaking off. And that thud when it hits the ground only exists in here. The sound waves working their way through the forest are just that, disruptions in the air, until they get into our ears and into our brains and into our consciousness and are heard. Similarly, what I've come to kind of begin to get my head around is, given the days and years and the natural phenomena of time, do you notice it's all about motion, it's all about change, it's all about things moving? Well, what if there was no motion? What if there was no change? What if everything was perfectly still? It's a hard thing to imagine, but imagine emptiness. And you're not there. Space, empty space, nothing happening at all. Prior to Einstein, and maybe right now, most of us would say, well, oh, of course you still have time. It's a separate dimension. You just have time clicking by in a space where nothing is happening. But if nothing is happening and nothing is perceiving it and nothing is changing, is there in fact any real time? And this is where Einstein's theory basically brings space and time and the creation of the universe all together as one thing. It's nice when science, philosophy, and one's faith fit with your convictions, values, ideas. A good example is oneness. I imagine there are a fair number of us in this church right now who are fond of the idea that we are all connected, we are all one, as a species, as a planet, life, and beyond life in the universe. And the beautiful thing is that most religious faith, most philosophies in some way or another connect with that, and the science connects with it too. Ecosystems, the genetics of humans and all other living things, the cycle of life and death, the idea that we are all fundamentally made out of the same particles, both living and non-living things, the conservation of matter and energy, the science that says race is a human construct and that we aren't really fundamentally different from one another. I'd be delighted if I had some support to back up my notions and beliefs about living in the present, about time. And what is the fundamental nature of the present, the nature of the past and the future, what is real, what is not, what is a product of our consciousness, and what exists separate from our consciousness? Whether time has a beginning and an end, or is something resembling infinite, if not truly infinite. The implications of time being relative. On all of this, I am pretty much lost. And none of it really helps me understand what the present moment is or where we're headed. But I am at peace with that, entertainingly so. And I look forward to continuing to work at it. For whatever it may be worth, I am still reasonably confident that I am right here, right now. And that you are right here, right now. And that we are all right here, right now. And perhaps the here and now is the most important place for us to be and to live, whatever it may actually be, even if we don't understand it. Good enough, at least for now, whatever now is or was or might be.